Welcome back to the
Oh no, it's
podcast.
like, hello?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, wait, hello?
Yeah.
What?
What's the
Okay, now it
problem?
works. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. We are here once again.
Yeah, hey everyone. Thanks for joining us again. And today is an exciting day, I think, because today is a topic that's quite psychoanalytic with a little bit more
Yes.
substance. Because I don't know about you, but I feel like the last episodes kind of have been very chit-chatty and like easygoing, which is fun, but I've kind of been craving talking about something more specific again.
Yeah, me too. I was about to say we are back and ready to attack, but that's really corny.
I love it. We're back and ready to attack.
But definitely more of a clinical episode. And yeah, we're excited to do it. It's been a while since we did something so specific with so much information, too.
Yeah, exactly. So much information. And nevertheless, I still think, once again, it is a topic, though, that we can all relate to in some way or another. And I think that this specific topic is something that's self-diagnosed a lot and very like casually thrown around. You know what I mean? Kind of
Yeah, and I
like back
think
when we talked about narcissism, like that's a term that you just know from your everyday life, whether you are into psychology or not, and you use it quite easily. And I think with today's topic, it's kind of the same.
the most often I hear it is when somebody says, "Oh my God, you're so OCD."
Exactly.
Which
So,
is an interesting way to put it too. Like, you're so OCD.
yeah, and it's such a negative
It's like
thing, you know, like.
that's not even like how you would phrase it either. It's like you have OCD.
Yeah.
You're not so OCD.
Exactly. So, today we will talk about everything that falls under the term of obsessional neurosis, and that's
Oh
like a
wait, I think
sec.
I hear your mic on your sweater.
What? Really? Like this
Yeah,
now? Better?
that's better.
Okay. So today we talk about everything that falls under the umbrella term of obsessional neurosis. And what's probably better known in like our colloquial language is OCD, which stands for obsessive compulsive disorder. But that already implies that it's a specific disorder, whereas obsessional neurosis is kind of like the big term for all the disorders and character traits and pathologies that fall under that, because there's many different ones, but you guys might know it under OCD. And in German, just to make it real quick, because we do have a lot of listeners who are German speakers, the umbrella term is Zwangsstörungen. So everything that is regarding obsessions, compulsions, in German, it's Zwänge.
Yeah, and I know that you actually wrote down, which I did not, like the kind of diagnostic criteria of OCD. Maybe we should go through that first. This is like currently, this is how you would get diagnosed with OCD. Like if you went to a psychiatrist or you went to a psychologist.
So clinically speaking, what we mean when we talk about anything that's regarding OCD is when someone has forced imposing repetitive thoughts, for example, numbers, you know, when you always have to think about the same numbers or a certain type of numbers, or also forced imposing repetitive impulses and actions. For example, washing your hands, or you walk on the street and every, I don't know, fourth step, you need to take a turn or something like that. And those are all really, really intense urges that impose themselves on you. And you have this extreme need to fulfill them, to do them. And if you don't do it, there's enormous amounts of tension and anxiety that builds up within you, and even guilt. And very often it's connected to a sort of magical thinking where you think, if I don't do this now, or if I don't have this thought, something bad will happen. which also often then leads to something that is called undoing, which is when you kind of reverse that behavior. You have to get rid of something. So it's kind of like this very pressuring, tense situation within you that kind of you have to do in order to establish a sort of balance or order. You know what I mean? It's like, I need to do this and this and this, or I need to think this and this and this in order to be okay, in order to be balanced, in order for nothing bad to happen. That's kind of what we call OCD. And there are subcategories in that clinical picture of OCD because some people have obsessive thoughts only, or some people only have obsessive or compulsive actions that they need to do, and some people have it mixed. Like there's all kinds of subcategories, but again, the broad term is obsessional neurosis.
Yes. So it's really hard to bring in, like, now I understand why people think psychoanalysis is so ridiculous, because I just listened to what you said and I'm like about to bring in Freud. And of course, the first like line that I'm gonna say is like, usually OCD is some kind of regression into the anal stage. So Freud has these kind of phases of the first years of your life. And we've gone through them a few times, but the anal stage is like the second phase of your life. So it's right after your oral phase, which is when all the pleasure and all the things basically happening in your life revolve around your mouth. For example, breastfeeding and babies that are very, very young, like less than 1 year old, everything kind of goes into their mouth, their hands, their feet, whatever they can find. So the next phase of your life is the anal phase, and this isn't, you know, weird or ridiculous. It's basically just another way of saying it's like your potty training phase. It's the phase where your parents teach you how to go to the bathroom by yourself. And this is a stage in your life that's all about control. And a lot of toddlers, they learn how to control their surroundings, but they use it to control their toilet habits. So, first of all, toilet training, it sounds like a very small detail in an upbringing or in growing up, but it brings a kid a lot of anxiety because all of a sudden, you know, first you are this baby, everything you do is kind of, it's either somebody takes care of it for you, or it's like on you. You know, you have a diaper, you get fed, like you don't have to go anywhere or do anything. And all of a sudden, like there's this action or this thing that's expected of you that's separate from you. And even that concept is crazy when you're first introduced to it. It's like, wait, there are things in this world that are separate from me, but they belong to me. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's like when you go to the bathroom, you're getting rid of something that was a part of you. And you also have to say goodbye to it. You know, it's like your first experience of saying goodbye to something, which later we learn is like your first experience of mourning. So, yeah, such a simple act is actually such a significant act in your life. And this is where like OCD really becomes a part of it because you have two kind of categories of the anal phase. And you have like the anal retentive, which is the toddler who has a lot of anxiety and really wants to control their surroundings. So what they do is that they hold it in. So they have to go to the bathroom, but they actually hold it and they don't go to the bathroom. And this gives them a sense of control and it relieves some of that anxiety. And I won't go into the other character so much, but it's basically the opposite, like the explosive one. And it's thought that the kids who are anally retentive, it's thought that their parents were very harsh on them when toilet training came about, or kind of treated them with shame, or not even that they did treat them with shame or that they were harsh on them, but that's how the kids perceived it. And this was like a big stress. So this anally retentive character often develops into an OCD character. And when we say, "Oh my God, you're so anal," if somebody's neat or organized or picky, like that is exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about the anal phase.
Yeah, totally. I was just about to say that it's interesting that this word has also kind of been introduced into our day-to-day language, where you can say, oh, as you said, like when someone is just very neat, very organized, like I often describe myself anal in a few ways, because I am very specific about how I like certain things, etc. And in that sense, I am anal. It makes a whole lot of sense if you think about it. In a kid's development, you're so dependent, and like, especially from that very first stage of the oral phase. Like, we've talked about this, for example, in our episode on body image, etc., where it plays a huge role because of the eating. But you're so dependent on every single person around you. And then comes the anal stage, and it's like one of the first things, maybe the first thing that really you are in control of. So it's a huge thing, the potty training. In the establishment of our own autonomy. And it is later seen in this OCD type of behaviors in people that maybe there was a fixation, or maybe, the therapy can focus on that stage of life, like what happened there. But I think it's also important to differentiate or say that, the thing about obsessional neurosis and everything in that category is that it can appear in all kinds of people. So if someone has OCD or OCD traits, characteristics, it can be in someone who is, a depressed person. It can be someone who is a psychotic person. There can be all various levels of personality structure and pathology, or it can be someone who is, quote unquote, just neurotic and has OCD. What combines it is that the obsessions and the compulsions are a way to resolve an unconscious conflict. It's a way to kind of get that balance, to get that inner psychic order, to maybe fend something uncomfortable that's unconscious off. It's like a way of defense. And there is an own diagnosis of someone who is an obsessive character. Like that is an own diagnosis. It's called the obsessive or anancastish. I don't know what it's called in English.
Anancastic, same.
Anancastic, yeah, and that's like a personality disorder, and personality disorders are different again. So I think we won't get into that today, but I just think it's interesting that the obsessions, the compulsive behavior, it's a way of just dealing with your unconscious shit, basically, like in all different types of personalities. And also, I think it's so interesting that to a certain degree, an obsessive behavior is quite normal in our development. Like, I know for myself, and I know many, many people who have shared the same with me. And I remember we had a lecture once with a youth psychiatrist, and he told us that very often at like the onset of puberty, or even before puberty, around the age of like 10, 11, 12, it's very normal that kids have tics or like obsessive behaviors or thoughts. And I think, I'm just wondering why that is, but I think it's because puberty is kind of like where that repetition of that early developmental stage comes.
Yeah, I think it's also you're going through it's weird. Like you don't think about puberty and your teenage years as like it's it's not really included in psychoanalysis so much, like we focus on way before that. But I think your teens and that whole part of your life, it's also a new phase. And I think when you're
Definitely.
entering like a new phase, you're obviously matched with like so much anxiety.
Yeah, it's
And
interesting.
those obsessions are such a good way to like escape anxiety.
Totally. It's interesting that you mentioned that because that's a topic that I'm currently really, really into for like a paper I wrote. And in classical psychoanalysis, like Freud didn't really focus on it so much because he like established that whole theory about the very early childhood. And then he basically said that puberty is just a repetition of this early conflict of the Oedipal phase and needs to be resolved. But more contemporary, not even contemporary, but psychoanalysts that came after him, like Erik Erikson,
Erickson, yeah.
or Peter Bloss is his name, they had a lot of focus on puberty and adolescence. And it's very interesting because they introduced also just this huge notion of the societal pressure on very young people. Like when you're 12, 13, 14, all of a sudden you're also kind of expected to be able to do things on your own. And it is a huge separation from your family, from your parents. And as you say, that comes with so much anxiety. So developing tics and like compulsive
Yeah.
disorders is probably a very logical way of kind of gaining some control. Did you have that when you were a teenager?
So I'm like really very far from this type of character. I'm like the anally explosive one, which sounds fucking gross. But yeah, even I did, which is like, which means that like it's really a part of your, of everyone's life. Like I was just thinking about one thing that I did. Like I always had to put more deodorant on my right side. But like that's an obsession. Like that's a compulsive thing because it didn't make sense. Like there was no reason for it, but for some reason I had to do it.
Dude, I had it so bad. Like, I really had it
Really?
bad. Yeah, really bad. Like, from when I was, I'd say, 10 to 12, I had it very bad at night. Like, I could not go to sleep without looking under my bed a certain number of times. I don't remember what. And, like, even just pressing down the door handle a certain number of times. And I would
Oh
have,
my
like,
God.
yeah, I would have like seven, eight different things in my room that I would need to check. And they were also very weird. Like, under the bed, okay, maybe that's something that a lot of kids do. But like really odd stuff, like behind that certain book or something, I
Yeah.
would or need to open it or something. It made no sense. And there was also a phase when I was walking on the street and I had to turn a certain number of times. Or I think a very classic thing is that many people can relate to is, when you're walking on the street and you're not allowed to touch certain cobblestones, I guess, on the street or something like that. You know what I mean? The thing that's between the pavement. I don't know how to
Yeah,
call it.
yeah. Oh, yeah, I did that
Yeah. And
as well.
I remember I was very freaked out by it and I kind of thought, oh my God, this is because it was exhausting to do that every night.
Yeah.
And then seriously, I don't know how it stopped. It just did, basically one day. I think it was like a part of that maturing process. So if you've had this when you're listening, don't worry. It's all good. Many of us did.
Yeah, I think it's like, of course, we're talking about a disorder, but it's something that's so. I think it's really important also to understand that you don't have something or you don't, you know? It's not like, okay, either I have this or I don't. And if I don't have it, then I will never have it. It's these things, like every disorder that you read about, I really think almost every disorder, at one point of your life, you're gonna feel like you have a lot in common with that description. And it's because like things are always happening around you and we always find ways to deal with them. And compulsions are one way to deal with stress. And in one stressful time of your life, you might turn to that way, you know? And like in a different time of your life, you might form, I don't know, an addiction, you know? There's like different. It doesn't mean that you're always gonna turn to the same way of dealing with anxiety. Like, that's such a false concept.
Yeah, and I think also it just there's always a chance that even if you think you're not going to develop it or you don't have it to even the slightest degree, maybe people in your environment have it, or you see someone on the street who behaves weirdly, and just kind of having that knowledge about these common, I don't know, conditions can also help you be more empathetic and be more understanding. For example, what I still do, like at night, I like check if my door is locked probably like 5 times over like a few hours. It's not like I go there constantly and check it, but I will lock the door, and then while I brush my teeth, I will go and just check again and stuff like, and if someone saw that, they would probably be like, "Why are you doing this? This is so weird. You have checked it." But for me, I don't know, it makes me feel okay. It doesn't exhaust me, it doesn't stress me out, and I kind of laugh about it, and I'm like, yeah, it's kind of my OCD, I guess. But there's, and I don't consider myself someone who has OCD, but maybe, I mean, in that sense, to a very slight degree, I have it, and that's okay.
So another thing that's interesting about OCD is, like, I feel like it's such a we think of it as like such a personality type, and we think of it as, I don't know, we really use it to describe how a person is as a person. But the interesting thing about OCD is that it's actually like ego dystonic, which means that like the person who's experiencing OCD understands and like realizes that these thoughts and compulsions are like not, they don't match with who they want to be. And they don't match with who they feel that they are. So it's not like this person is actually convinced, you know, if I don't do this, if I don't click the light 10 times,
My dad's gonna die.
my dad's gonna die. It's just, it's almost like I can't risk that something will happen if I don't do this. I don't know why, but I just have to. And that's like the really interesting thing about it, because you know that what you feel like you have to do is wrong, but you still can't stop.
Exactly. And that only, I mean, think about it, knowing that. Just imagine if someone really struggles with an OCD behavior, or OCD, I mean, how much embarrassment and shame that person must feel because they know. And you know, maybe it's someone who is very smart and very rational and very knowledgeable, and they know that their behavior doesn't make sense, and they know rationally that, you know, turning on the light 10 times probably won't make their dad die, but nevertheless, this very intense urge and enormous amounts of anxiety within them is just so strong that they just still have to do it. And that must be so shameful for them to even open up to someone, because most people will say very easily, like, "Why are you doing this? Like, no, nothing won't ha will happen. Don't worry." You know what I mean? And it doesn't do any good, because it's a way of resolving something deeper underlying, which I think brings us to the first, like, there's two main theories that I came across when we speak about the psychodynamics of this type of disorder. Basically, psychodynamics means what's happening in your psyche unconsciously, like why this behavior exists. And the first one, the very classical psychoanalytic one, the older one, so to say, is that it is an inner psychic compromise. So there's a part of our psyche. We did an Instagram post on like the id, the ego, the superego. So you have no idea what we're talking about. Maybe go check that out first. But basically, a classical psychoanalytic theory is that there is the side of the id, the very unconscious, strong impulses and drives. And on the other side, it's the superego, the very strict, like rational voice, basically. And the impulses are kind of our impulses, the compulsions are kind of a compromise, because one side is very strong and the other side is very strong. And the obsessional behavior kind of, is a middle way to resolve that conflict.
Yeah, I think like Yeah, maybe like it describe the second one too, because in my opinion, they really do actually work together. Like
Totally.
they
Yeah.
actually don't exclude each other.
Definitely. The second one is that people who really struggle with OCD have a relatively weak ego. So there's something in them that's not fully cohesive. Like maybe their ego just, maybe there wasn't enough affection from their primary caregivers, maybe their mentalization, their mirroring face, etc., just wasn't good enough to establish a really cohesive sense of self. And so they're relatively unstable and weak, which, don't get us wrong, this does not mean that it's someone who's really disturbed. Like many, many people have that. If you went to analysis, you would probably assume you have that as well.
I think we both don't have the strongest ego.
Yeah, and it's again this term of like what is good enough, etc. But that's a different topic. But however, in that theory, the compulsions are a way to maintain an inner safety, stability, a cohesion, which goes back to what we talked about before, this anal phase of gaining some control
Yeah.
over yourself. So kind of keep
And
yourself together.
yeah, and I think that really works well with actually the earlier thought because the ego is basically the compromise. Like, that's why I don't even really like, I get the difference, but it's almost just like an expansion of the first one because the ego, like, our ego is our compromise between the id and the superego. So it, like, it satisfies the id and the superego by like basically getting the best result possible at the end, and it helps us function in the real world because I mean if we were either or, like if we were too much into our superego or too much into our id, we would not do well in society. I do have like a thought though about like the compromise between the id and the superego because I feel like OCD is some kind of a weird identification with your superego. Like, I feel like you're much more kind of on the side of your superego because there are these, it's like the same type of thinking. It's almost like when your superego is intact, it's like this moral voice in your head that tells you what to do. And I think OCD characters in general are more of these kind of moral people who want to do the right thing and who want to be the right person. And yeah, that's why I don't really actually understand where the id comes into it.
I understand what you mean. Maybe it's kind of that an impulse, an unconscious impulse arises and it's super strong, right? Like it's maybe overwhelming and you don't know how to deal with it. So it almost, the thing that comes out, the obsessional behavior or thought or whatever, is a disguised id impulse.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not the actual impulse. That's why also we say it's a way of resolving an inner psychic conflict. It's like disguised. And that's where the superego comes in. And it's like, well, you
Yeah.
cannot really think what you want to think or do what you want to do because it's inappropriate, it's not okay. But the compromise is you think about the whatever. You have to think about the number five, like 52 times, whatever. But I think what can be said in either way is that it's really about this control and this fear of being overwhelmed by inner anxiety and being punished. And in that sense, I understand what you mean, that it's almost sacrificing your autonomy and what yourself in order to fulfill the wishes of the superego and kind of be like, when that inner voice basically tells you, okay, now turn around three times and you're walking on the street and you think like, no, that's embarrassing. I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna do it. But then the thoughts are so strong and you're like, okay, whatever, I just do it. Because then they're gone. Then I have like my peace for 5 minutes or maybe 2 minutes. I don't know. So it's almost, it makes me kind of sad to talk about it almost because I feel like people who really struggle with that are really imprisoned in themselves.
Definitely. So I think like one of our professors was telling us, you think about these OCD patients and a lot of OCD characters, they're actually very mean and like can seem very narcissistic. And that surprised me because I actually didn't expect that. But one of our professors was telling us that they are very mean, very like very narcissistic and very hard to treat because they actually really resist treatment. And you really have to like take a second and try to empathize with these people because you are literally living in your own prison. Like you've made yourself a prisoner because you have to follow like all these rules that don't even like they don't even apply to anybody else except for you. And for me, like the thought of that, it's like complete torture.
It is. It really is. And it makes sense what you just said. It's that the higher functioning the person is with the OCD, because once again, it can occur in all different kinds of people. Someone you would objectively maybe consider less stable and so to say low functioning, or someone who is, I don't know, a super successful lawyer. I don't know, you know what I mean? They could also have OCD, but someone who has kind of come to terms with their OCD and kind of agreed to that compromise that is happening within them, they're harder to treat because the anxiety of also a life without that is probably so high. If you already have that anxiety of not fulfilling one compulsion or one obsessive thought, then just imagine the anxiety that comes when you think, oh my God, I could not have that at all. What would happen? Because you're just so used to it and you're kind of, yeah, just come to terms with it and kind of
Yeah,
start that compromise.
so there's like two themes in OCD. There's like the undoing, which I think we talked about a lot, but there's also like this isolation aspect, which is exactly what we're saying. It's like thoughts have to be isolated. That's why they're followed by compulsions, because they need to be separate from each other. And like the main way that somebody with OCD functions is that they keep their thoughts from contaminating each other.
Okay, could you do you have an example for
Yeah.
that?
Yeah, so it's really easy to understand if you know what free association is. So like somebody with OCD, free association is like their worst nightmare because one thought can't lead to another one. So you can't think like, oh yeah, I saw my grandmother today, and then try to imagine what that reminds you of. That's like the worst thing possible for somebody who has OCD. And that's why these like compulsions are so useful because they break up the thoughts. And
Wow,
I
that
think
like,
that
yeah, sorry.
is why they are the hardest, the hardest patient you can ever have, because it literally goes against psychoanalysis. What you're trying to do, like what you're trying to do with them, is exactly what they want to avoid, and what they every single day they do everything that they can to avoid that.
I also read when it comes to therapy and treatment of OCD, and it connects very well to that. I read that in that sense, I think the treatment of OCD nowadays in psychoanalysis, and it is treatable with various kinds of therapies, but we talk about psychoanalysis, you focus less on like the classical psychoanalysis and more on relatively modern intersubjective psychoanalysis, where you focus on building positive experiences with that patient outside the therapy room. So it's less about digging up dirt. Maybe that comes after a while, I'm sure. So you know where it comes from, the whole problem. But in the beginning, it's really more about strengthening that ego that we talked about before, that's probably not very cohesive or just a little bit weaker. And the more you strengthen that in therapy, maybe or hopefully, the less you have the need to strengthen it with your own OCD behavior. So the stronger the ego gets, the less desire you may have to self-treat with OCD. And then I think once you're a bit more stable, you can start digging and understand where it comes from.
So I read something which I actually don't understand.
Okay.
So obviously in psychoanalysis, most of your issues are because of an early sexual event. So something early happens and it's sexual and you repress it.
Yeah, that's like in
And
a
then later
classical
on,
psychoanalytic
yeah, later
sense.
on, you find that you have issues.
It sounds so
But
easy.
I know it's so easy. But when I was reading, so I was reading about OCD and I was reading about, where it comes from. And it says that in OCD, in contrast to what happens in hysteria, which is basically the opposite of OCD, you experience the sexual event, but you actually get pleasure from it. Okay,
Okay.
wait, now I literally understand it now that I
Okay,
not that I said it
I
out
don't get it,
loud.
so explain it to me.
So in hysteria, this early sexual event is a trauma,
Yeah.
usually. So in OCD, this is classical psychoanalysis, by the way. It sounds a little bit offensive. In OCD, you experience an early sexual event. This can be anything. We can perceive literally anything as sexual.
Exactly. It
It
doesn't
could be
have to
somebody
be
changing your diaper.
exactly or touching whatever
Yeah.
your head.
Yeah, seriously. So an OCD person experiences this event as pleasurable and is aware of this as when they're a child. And of course, then they learn from society that it's completely not okay, unacceptable. And they have such strong feelings of guilt that they try to like make up for it.
Oh, I see. Hence the undoing and stuff.
Exactly.
Wow.
So
Okay.
they're trying desperately to like fix it.
Which again makes sense because of the very strong super ego that tells them
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
okay, you're not allowed to enjoy that. Undo it, undo it, undo it.
And yeah, it says like obsessional neurotics have to develop a super morality to basically protect this disgusting image of themselves that they have.
Which becomes also very clear in a very typical OCD behavior, which is washing your hands
Yeah.
obsessively, because it's literally cleaning yourself of some imagined fantasized dirt.
Right. Okay, so never mind.
We get it.
It makes some sense. It's a
Yeah.
little, it's very classical.
Yeah, it's very classical and it's a theory, and of course, it varies from patient to patient or from person to person who have OCD. And of course, there's again a scale of like the intensity of OCD you can have. And there's people who are very strongly affected by it and probably cannot function in everyday life. But there's also so many people who have OCD to a degree where, again, they have kind of come to terms with the compromise. So it all depends on the individual and their also personality structure. But man, I love this topic. I think it's so interesting, and I'm really curious to kind of talk about it with people I know and hear from them if
Yeah.
they have that kind of behavior in any way of their lives. Because I think also when you've been living with it, and that can be just your little, I don't know, neurotic character traits, you know, you wouldn't even consider it an obsessional behavior because it's so normal.
I think I have a lot of obsession, but no compulsion. So I really relate with the obsessional part. Because I think I have a lot of obsessive thoughts. And it's like the super weird feeling because you have these intrusive thoughts that are almost coming into your mind and you really feel like they're foreign or somebody like placed them into your head because they don't, like I said before, it's ego dystonic. They don't belong to you. And I feel that all the time. Like it makes it even like hard to focus sometimes because I have so many intrusive thoughts coming into my head, and of course most of them are negative or sexual. And it's I actually have not found a solution. I have not found a solution because I don't have compulsions. Like, I'm so pissed because like I have the obsessed like of the obsessive thoughts, but I actually have not found a way to deal with them.
Yeah, but that also just shows that thankfully they are under a certain level of where you can function still, because I get that it's annoying and stuff, but you function in your everyday life. But it's interesting. We're like yin and the yang, the yin and the yang, because I'm the opposite. I think I have way more compulsions than obsessive thoughts. Like I do that thing where I need to check if my door is locked. Like when I leave my house, it's so funny. I walk at least 3 times from my door to the kitchen just to check if the lights are off. And I know the lights are off, but for me, it's like, whatever, I'll check again. It's so bizarre. And I also, maybe this is not OCD, but it plays into my anal character more, is that I just hate having stuff lying around. Like, I mean, you come to my apartment, it's pretty neat. It's not min you wouldn't say I'm a minimalist or anything, because everything's just in drawers and cupboards and boxes within a box or something like that. But that's like my anal character coming through. But it's fine. I'm actually pretty fine with it. But interestingly enough, it really has gotten so much better in the last, well, 2.5 years that I've been in psychoanalysis or something. And I didn't even specifically focus on that, but
I'm better as well. I was just offended when my therapist said that I have a learning disability
oh my God, he's so harsh
because of
sometimes.
these intrusive thoughts. He was like, "Yeah, how can you like focus on anything? You have a learning disability." And I was just like, "What?"
Well, let us know, guys, let us know if you have experience with OCD, if you want to share, even if it's something small, funny, or if you have had this phase in your development, also in your puberty, where you went through certain tics or something. And if you want to know more specific things about OCD, stuff like Tourette's syndrome or something is so interesting, but that's again something different.
Yeah, if you have any questions, you can always ask us. I mean, we'll do our best to answer, or we'll, I don't know, recommend a good book or a good article. But we love getting any kind of feedback or questions. And yeah, we're always up for chatting.
And yeah, let us know what kind of topics you want to hear in the future, like always. I know we ask that all the time, but just because we want to keep the podcast going, so just keep the topics coming. I think it could be quite interesting to do an episode about hysteria,
Definitely.
which is like was the very first diagnosis in psychoanalysis, which doesn't exist anymore. But again, the term someone
Which is
is
such
his
a shame.
It's, but we would all be hysterics. But it's so interesting, historically speaking, because it's connected to all the hypnotherapy that was done in the age of Freud. And also nowadays, you still say, like, oh my God, you're so hysteric, or something like that, you know? So,
Yeah, it's true. Let us know.
and we hope to hear from you. We hope to hear from you soon. Like, no, we hope you tune in again next week, but
Thanks
also we hope to hear from you. Hit us up, call us.
for listening.